is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is JP Clark, former NBA assistant coach with the Celtics and Clippers, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
It's so fun to see these kids, first and second grade, and then you just see them progress, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, and you see these kids get better. That's what's fun, is because you look forward to coaching these kids. Think, God, someday, you know, and I tell kids, hey, I can't wait till you get to high school, you know, so we can coach you. Okay, I can't wait to see you. You know, and that's what keeps you going. You know, it's the kids.
Dean Rejas has been the head boys basketball coach at Revere High School in Richfield, Ohio since 2002. During his tenure, the Minutemen have won multiple Suburban League titles and a district championship. Rejas has been named the Suburban League Coach of the Year 4 times and the Summit County Coach of the Year 3 times. Dean coached current Cleveland Cavalier Larry Nance Jr. as a high school player. Rejas was a 3-year varsity player at Valley Forge High School in the state of Ohio under Hall of Fame coach John Stavoli. Dean was named third team All-Ohio as a senior and went on to play his freshman year of college basketball at Ohio University and later finished his career at Cleveland State University for legendary coach Raleigh Massimino. Dean began his teaching and coaching career at Olmsted Falls High School under Coach Pat Donahue and then returned to Cleveland State as a graduate assistant for Raleigh Massimino before taking over at Revere. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Our roster of shows is growing, so don't forget to check out all our other podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod Network, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, The On the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, Courtside Culture, and our team-focused NBA podcasts, Cavaliers Central, Knuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, Spanning the Spurs, LA Hoops, The Wizards Hoops Analyst, Lakers Fast Break, and At the Buzzer. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Email us info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Grab a pen and paper before you listen to this episode with Dean Rejas, head boys basketball coach at Revere High School in Richfield, Ohio. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, who is down in Disney World with his family for spring break. But I am pleased to be joined by a guy that I have known for a long time, going back probably at least 30 years, I would say, probably longer than that. Dean Rejas, who is the head boys basketball coach at Revere High School here in Richfield, Ohio. Dean, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Thanks, Mike. It's really a privilege and honor to be on your show and looking forward to catching up.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on, be able to dig into your basketball story. Want to go back in time to when you were a kid growing up in Parma. Tell me a little bit about how you got into the game. What were some of your first experiences?
You know, I didn't start playing basketball till probably about fifth or sixth grade. My parents, Greek immigrants, so they were more into soccer. So, you know, I started playing soccer, you know, before I started playing basketball. And then my good friend John Jakovic, who I grew up with, his dad belonged to a racquetball club that had some basketball hoops. It was called Center Courts over in Parma Heights. It's no longer there. It's over there by Byers, where that Target is and all those shops are. It was back there, and you know, he used to take us up there, and you know, he'd play racquetball, and you know, me and John, we would shoot baskets and play against each other, and that's really kind of how it started. I mean, just going to a racquetball club and playing a little basketball, and then we played in you know, there was a winter basketball league. You know, we'd play games at like Hillside, and you know, I started playing there, and then you know, my brother's friends, which you graduated in 88, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of his friends, you know, were basketball players. So, you know, I always hung out with those guys and watched them play in high school, because, let's see, when I was in seventh and eighth grade, my friend, you know, the John and his dad, they'd pick me up and we'd go watch Valley Forge play.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of how it kind of got started, you know, watching those really good Valley Forge teams. And, you know, when I was in eighth grade, you know, Valley Forge went to the Final Four, which was unbelievable. And that really, you know, kind of like lit the fire, like, man, we want to do that, you know. And you know, all we wanted to do was play basketball. I mean, we just, you know, now my freshman year in high school, you know, I played football, I played basketball, I ran track. And then, you know, after my freshman year, I just decided, hey, I'm just going to focus on basketball. And, you know, I was a late bloomer, you know, even like middle school, you know, I was a little kid in middle school with glasses. And, you know, when I was a freshman, I was like his little geeky kid, you know what I mean, with glasses and these short shorts. You remember those short shorts?
Oh, absolutely. Back then? Absolutely. You look at those pictures from that era and you're like, oh my gosh. Even I laugh because obviously today, not the short shorts. Guys that are talking about wearing short shorts today have no idea what real short shorts look like.
No, I mean, now they roll them up at the waist. You
right,
know what I mean?
For sure.
Like, and my son does that. You know, he's in fifth grade. And, you know, which I'd rather have him around his waist than hanging off his butt.
For sure.
You know, but yeah, you look at those shorts, like you said, and I mean, it's amazing that we were even able to reproduce and have kids. You know, it's a miracle. But yeah, I just remember, you know, Mr. Jackwick coming and picking me up, and then, man, we'd go to those Valley Forge games, and they were great games, and the gyms were packed. And you know, then, like I said, in eighth grade, they went to the Final Four, and we went and watched them, you know, win the district and win the league and, you know, win the regional, and then go down to Columbus, and just being around those guys and, you know, guys like you. You know, I mean, I remember when I was, you know, freshman and eighth grade stuff, and you know, going to Forestwood. I mean, you remember Forestwood?
Absolutely. I spent a lot of time there on Saturday mornings.
Yeah, I mean, remember? I mean, we had some great games there, and you know, then the Omni. I mean, you look at the Omni. I mean, we lived at the Omni. I remember that. Remember that summer pass they used to have?
Yeah,
Mr. Mack used to have
You get the 3 month pass, and you could go in there, and it was like $90 or something like that. Maybe it was crazy.
It might have been 60. It was dumb.
Yeah.
It was.
Yep.
It was so cheap when you look at it, and you could just go as many times as you want. And that was the big thing, you know, and because, you know, all you guys would go there, and the college guys would go there, and the pros would go there. And it was really neat, man. You look back on that, and, you know, at the time, you just, oh, this is normal. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yep.
You just think, like, this is ordinary stuff. And now I think, you know, you look back, and I really, you know, appreciate it more and treasure it, you know, what Mr. Mackey did, and he has a lot to do with, you know, kind of our success today, you know, where we're at.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, you and I talked a little bit when we were prepping for the podcast just about how big of an influence pickup basketball had on us. And, you know, you mentioned the Omni, you mentioned Forest Wood, and I know that I spent, you know, ungodly amounts of time at both of those places. And just, you know, having an opportunity to play with players of all different, you know, all different ages and different, you know, different abilities and adults and kids. And I just think that it's something that kids today miss out on. And I think, you know, just hearing you talk about your memories of that Valley Forge team that went to the Final Four and they lost to Columbus Lyndon McKinley. I still remember I was there, and those guys were, you know, from Bill Riggle and, you know, Dave Berger and Larry McEwen,
yeah,
and, Pat Tarisi and Barry Smith and the whole, you know, I mean, all right. I mean, the whole group, I mean, those are guys that I grew up with playing. You know, we used to go, and I don't know if it might have been gone by the time you were around, but did you ever go and play at Tri-C?
Yes.
On Friday nights for $1?
Yes.
And you would go,
yes,
and you'd sit in the hallway and get there like a half hour early, right, so you could get in the first game, and then you'd pay your $1, yeah, and you'd go and play at this community college.
Gosh.
And so, I mean, I remember we would go up there, you know, and I had some guys from Strongsville that we'd go, mm-hmm, up and we'd play. And I got to be, you know, really good friends with Billy and Bergs. And it just,
yeah,
you know, and then the funniest part of this whole story is that in first grade, I grew up, I lived in Parma Heights and would have, had I stayed there, I went to Cryle Elementary School, which closed. I went there in first grade, and then it, you know, I think at some point that closed. But I always, you know, the fact that Forge went to the Final Four that year, I'm like, you know, part of you always says, boy, it would have been interesting if I would have stayed and, you know, been around and been a part of that, you know, part of that team. And I thought my team could have got there, and I've gone into that story on the podcast. I don't want to go into it again, but nonetheless, that was a special group of guys, and, you know, again, for them to be able to go down and get the Columbus and make a Final Four. I mean, I know from talking to them how special it was to them, but just you think about it from the community, and I don't think about it necessarily always from like those younger kids like yourself that are looking up and saying, wow, you know, hey, I'd love to be a part of that someday. I think that's one of the things, and maybe you can speak to this as a high school coach. I think one of the things that is lacking in a lot of places is that same feeling that you had, or I know I had growing up in Strongsville, that I wanted to be a part of it. Like from the time I was a second or third grader, like I would go to those games, and I just, mm-hmm, I wanted to be like those guys who were part of the high school team. And I think that it's something that's so, I think it's something that's so important if you're trying to build a high school basketball program, is to have that aspirational setup for the kids that are younger, that they want to someday be a part of your program.
Right. I agree. And that's, you know, when I first took over at Revere, you know, I made sure that we kind of built it from the bottom up. We wanted to make sure that we ran a youth league, you know, travel program, and, you know, set the hook on those kids at an early age and make them feel, you know, like they're a part of the program.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so critical. So we'll come back to it. We'll come back to your playing career, but I think this is a good thing to kind of jump into talking about the youth piece of it. So how do you go about, what's your philosophy on your involvement as the varsity coach? Just kind of tell us how you have it set up at Revere to be able to set this up for success at the varsity level.
Well, the nice thing about Revere, it's small enough where I can keep my hand on it. You know what I mean? So I'm pretty much in charge first grade through 12th grade. Which is nice. And what we do, for example, we run a youth basketball league, right? First grade through sixth grade. And, you know, our first and second grade program is more like skills and drills with some playing. And we do this Saturday mornings. It starts maybe that last week in October, and we go through maybe the second or third week in December, and it's every Saturday morning. And like, for example, we'll have like first and second graders, two separate sessions, like 8 to 9, like 9:15 to 10:15, whatever. And we have our freshman players, and our freshman and JV coach, they run that like at our elementary school. Okay, so they work with those kids. And it's nice for our, you know, high school kids get to interact with those, you know, younger players. And then over at the middle school, we run a third through sixth grade league where we actually have real officials come. My high school guys coach them, you know, and we oversee that. So, you know, the beauty of that, and I've been here long enough where I've seen it's a cycle where, you know, like the kids I had that I have now, you know, they were coached by, right, you know, previous players, you know, so it's a cycle where those kids feel, you know, an immediate connection, and they can relate to those kids, you know, and they look up to those kids, you know, I mean, they look up to our varsity players, you know, and our JV players because they come to the games. Along with that youth league, you know, we also run our travel basketball program. So what we do is we'll have tryouts, and my coaching staff, middle school through high school, you know, we run the tryouts, we do the evaluations, you know, we select the teams with the input from the coaches, and we have parents coach, you know, obviously the travel teams. And then what we do is at every home game, we have a different travel team play at halftime for a little bit. So, you know, right there, we're trying to, you know, set the hook in those kids at an early age, you know, having to, you know, make them feel like they're a part of the program, and give them an immediate connection, you know, to the program by not only playing, but being there at the games, playing at halftime. So, you know, it's funny because we were talking about this a couple weeks ago with my seniors, like, hey, remember who coached you guys in youth league? And boom, man, they could rattle off their name. Right. They remember who coached them. You know what I mean? And it's funny. And, you know, I'll have guys, you know, who graduated a couple years ago be like, hey, whatever happened to so-and-so? You know, what's so-and-so doing right now? How's he look? You know what I mean? Because, and I tell you what, Mike, it's great because, you know, we, our first day of youth league, we do an evaluation, right? So we'll evaluate, you know, the kids third through sixth grade so we could put them on teams, right? Well, we combine fifth and sixth grade in a league. Fourth is separate, third is separate. But I have a draft. Like, I have an actual draft, like a lottery draft for, like, fifth and sixth grade. So I have my varsity players, like, seniors. Like, I have a bag with, like, numbered tennis balls, right? So they actually reach in there, and they pick a number. And I will put all the, like, fifth grade names, like, the top kids to the right, lowest scored kids, on a board, and I got a podium and everything. Oh yeah, we order pizzas. It's a big
ordeal.
That's
awesome. That's cool.
It's hilarious. I mean, it's a big ordeal. You know what I mean? And it's funny because the kids, you know, they know who the good kids are.
Right.
You know, they know what they're looking for. So, you know, if they have number one draft, and, you know, they see a kid, maybe he's a top rated kid, they're like, no, I don't want that kid. I want this kid. You know, so
that's cool.
Oh, they fight over players. It's hilarious. You know, and I always love when they, you know, on a Saturday morning after a game, and one of my varsity players will complain to me about, you know, this kid does this, this kid does that. And I said, oh, now you guys know how I feel, huh?
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? So
that's awesome.
And it's great because it's good that they interact with the kids, but they also interact with the parents, you know what I mean, which is really good. To me, it's a win-win situation. You know, that the community sees our guys interacting with the kids, you know, and having a good time and teaching them basketball. So, and, you know, and not everybody coaches the same. Some kids are pretty quiet. Some kids, you know, I got to light a fire under them and say, hey, man, let's go. You got to communicate more. But they get into it. They're very, very good. They get in.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that when I think back on my own situation when I was a kid, that's how it was set up in Strongsville when I was playing in like the rec leagues. Cause again, at that point, travel really didn't exist and AAU didn't exist in the same way. So you were just basically playing in your community league. But just like you were talking about your kids remembering who coached them. And I have guys that I remember who all my coaches were, and conversely, and I still have guys that coached me that I'm still friends with today that I still talk to. And right. It's funny, I actually have one guy that I talk to a lot. He and I were together on this trip and we connected with another guy who was of a similar era to my friend, they're both older than me. And they were talking about you described how they were fighting, your players are fighting over who gets who in the draft and all that. And they were reminiscing about fighting over who was going to get me on their team back when I was in, fifth grade and they were juniors in high school. And so it's just funny. And then I have kids that I coached that I still have connection to. And to me, there's no better way. And we all know that basketball is now set up in a lot of cases, in a lot of communities, where it's parent coaches and you don't have that interaction with right. The kids who are part of the program. And as you said, it's such a great public relations tool to be able to have not only the kids see your players, but also, as you said, the parents to see your players. But then you just think about it too as a tool for your players to be able to talk in front of a group and to be able to interact with parents right. And to do all those things. I just think there's so many benefits to it. And let's face it, every kid who's playing youth sports is being coached by lots and lots of parent coaches. Right. It's not often they're getting a chance to be coached by a high school kid. And so I just think that that's something that to me that makes so much sense on so many levels. There's so many benefits to it that,
yes.
And obviously from hearing you describe it, it's clear that that's the way you feel. And that's the way why you set it up that way.
Yeah. And, our parents, we have parent coaches for travel, and that's great. But the nice thing having the high school kids is that they can just have fun. You know what I mean? It's organized, but still, it's about having fun. And another thing we do, Mike, is we require all of our travel basketball kids to play in our youth league. Like, they have to.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I remember a parent asked me, well, why should they? They're better than those kids, right? I had a parent say this to me one time years ago. I said, you know what? I said, kids need to be able to play with kids of different skills and abilities. You know what I mean? Because I go, I'm not going to create this monster that, oh, we're travel kids. We're just, we're too good to play with the rec league play. No. Uh-uh. You know what I mean? Because you got to teach kids, some tolerance, some acceptance, some humility. And when you start creating this monster of, oh, especially at a young age. If you don't nip that at the bud at a young age, you're in trouble. I'm too good to play with those guys. Or you throw a pass at a kid who's wide open, it goes through his hands. You're going to look up in the stands and look at your parents and pout. Or are you going to be a good teammate and tap that kid on the rear and say, hey, man, don't worry about it. Next time, get it. You know what I mean? So that's why, I have that rule, that you have to play, our rec league if you're going to play in our travel program, because I think you're just teaching kids, life lessons of, again, tolerance, acceptance of others, of kids who have of maybe less ability than you.
Absolutely. And I love that because, one, you get kids too now who have to play a different role. So maybe on the travel team, they're the eighth man and they got to fit in, they play a role. But then on their rec league team, maybe they're the best player. And so now that requires a different set of skills. It requires a different way of interacting with teammates. And I think there's a tremendous amount of value there. And then when I was hearing you talk about, nipping it in the bud with getting out of control from the players, I think about it too from a parent standpoint, that like you start setting up this thing where parents are walking around, my kid's a travel kid. He's not playing in that stupid league over there, And then you got to deal with that when you get to high school where you have kids who have been the quote-unquote travel players the whole way, and now suddenly other kids are growing or getting better or improving, and now they're like, well, my kid's been on the A team since he was in the third grade. Why is he now suddenly the 11th man on his on his eighth grade team? And I'm sure those conversations probably take place more than any of us would really want to imagine. I always try to have these conversations with parents that, like, look, your kid can be on a rec team, your kid can be on the C team, your kid can be on the A team.
Right.
When they're 8 or 9 or 10 years old, just let me tell you this right now, it doesn't matter, because when they hit puberty and either they grow or they don't, or they develop sure. and become fast or they're not fast, or they're going to put in 2 hours a day in the off season and the other kid's not going to do anything. Well, guess what? It's all going to kind of work itself out. And I just keep trying to tell people, calm down. When your kid's 8, 9, 10 years old, just calm down and watch them play and let them have fun. And it all is going to figure itself out eventually through, again, how a kid develops physically and then how their love for the game eventually develops.
Right. Absolutely, Mike. I mean, you couldn't have said it any better. And we always say that at tryouts, like, look, just because you're on the A team this year doesn't mean you're going to be an A team next year. Kids get better, kids get worse. I mean, that's kind of the thing that we really, you know, emphasize. You know, there's no maintaining. You know, maintaining is a myth. You either get better or you get worse. You know, so nothing is, you know, you haven't arrived. You know, if the fifth grade basketball is the highlight of your basketball career, then that's not a good career. You know, just like winning the fifth grade championship, you know. I mean, if you're in high school and you're looking back and saying, man, hey, remember when we won that fifth grade championship? I mean, if that's what you're proud of, then, you know, that's not a good,
right,
a good career.
Exactly. Yep, I agree with you 100%. How do you work with those parent coaches for the travel program to help them to make sure that they are – teaching the game in a way that fills in with your philosophy? How do you work with them to make sure that they're staying on the same page with you as the high school varsity coach?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because my first year at Revere, you know, we ran our youth league and travel basketball was around. I really wasn't involved with it because it was just becoming popular. You know what I mean? You know, when you and I grew up, there was no travel basketball.
Yeah, it didn't exist at all.
It was non-existent. So I kind of sat back and watched, and I saw 1 year of it, Mike, and that's all I could take. I am seeing these guys, you know, these super coaches, you know, parent coaches, running pick and rolls where the two best players are on the right side of the floor, and the other three guys are in the corner watching. I'm watching kids who are making the team, who the only reason they're making the team is because they're friends with their son. You know what I mean? Even though they're not good enough to be on the team, but they're, you know, the coach's son's good friend. Let's see. I had another guy who was going to cut a kid who was really, really good, skilled kid, you know, flashy kid. He said, oh, he's too fancy with his ball handling. And that kid went on to play at Princeton, by the way.
There you go.
Yeah, too flashy. Smart kid. He's in med school right now at UCLA. So, actually, I think he's done with med school at UCLA. But, you know, I saw it for a year and I said, oh my God, what is this? I can't, you know, I cannot watch this because it's going to hurt our program. We have to have some type of consistency so we're all speaking the same language and we're all on the same page. So after that, I took over and, you know, every year I have a coach's clinic with the travel coaches and I give them a packet, real simple. You know, our philosophy is, you know, keep it simple, stupid. You know what I'm saying? You know, the three rules, you know, that we have all throughout our program are, number one, be on time. Number two, show class. Number three, work hard. I mean, three simple rules. That's it. You know, I'm not a coach to have 3,000 rules. And so we go over, you know, offense. We go over defense, you know, terminology. So we're using the same, you know, what we call our defenses at the high school level, we want the same thing at our lower levels. You know, we're not trying to hide anything. You know, but again, it's very elementary. It's very basic. That way our coaches have a framework of what's expected. And, you know, there's a progression as to what they learn at the different levels. You know, so that way our, you know, middle school coaches, when they get those kids, they're ready. And I always tell the travel coaches, I tell them straight up, I said, let me tell you something. I said, when my middle school coaches get these kids, and if they don't know what the heck's going on, and they're not very good, I blame you guys. I tell them straight up. I tell them straight up, Mike. You yep. know, I said, that's on you guys, because you have everything in front of you to teach these kids what we need and what's expected. So when they come up and they have no idea what our man defense is, our principles, and they don't know our offense, that's on you guys.
Yeah, I think that's key. You have to, if you're going to build that program like you talked about, being in charge of grades 1 through 12, then you have to take that responsibility of being able to teach. I think too often sometimes you just assume, well, yeah, they're going to teach what we want them to be, what we need to be taught. Right. And we all know that that's not the case.
No.
Coaches, those coaches tend to go rogue pretty quickly. So if you can get them on the same page, at least with the terminology, at least with a few key components that you want to do on offense, you want to do on defense. And so, as you said, once they get into your Scholastic program, then you've already built that base that you can continue at each level. You can continue to go up and add bits and pieces to it until they're ready for the varsity level. Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season, and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com, and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time. When you're thinking about putting together your coaching staff, and we all know that being able to find really good, especially middle school coaches, with the time that practices and all that kind of thing, just tell me a little bit about your process for putting together a coaching staff and what you're looking for in some of your coaches at that, at those lower levels.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm looking for, you know, a guy that, you know, understands the game, you know, has some experience with coaching, obviously. You know, it's coaching or playing experience helps. And, you know, somebody that has a good attitude and good demeanor with the kids. You know, our program, our coaching style, we're not in your face, screaming, yelling, embarrassing kids, humiliating kids. I mean, that's just not our style. It's never been. You know, I've never played for a coach like that at all levels, high school and college. You know, and I always remember my high school coach, you know, Coach Savoli, saying, "Hey, look, I'm not going to yell and embarrass you in front of people. If you're playing bad, you're already embarrassing yourself. People can see, you know, they can see that you're playing bad and messing up. So I don't need to draw any more attention to it. Now, at halftime, I might get on you. After the game, I might get on you. Practice, I might get on you. You know what I mean? So, you know, we want guys that are teachers first. Yeah, I mean, we want guys that are going to teach the game. You know, unfortunately, you know, basketball is, you know, undertaught and overcoached. You know, you have a lot of guys want the magic defense, the magic offense, you know, 50,000 plays, and, you know, after they score, they want to tap themselves on the back. And, you know, I mean, you need players to win. But, yeah, we want, you know, someone who's a teacher and then a coach is going to set a good example for our kids. And we've been very fortunate, you know, to have very good coaches do that.
Do you do the same thing with those middle school coaches that you do with the travel coaches in terms of going down and putting a clinic and communicating with them throughout the season? Just how does that process work for you guys?
Yeah, I give them a packet, and we all meet. I'll have a coaches meeting before the season starts with my middle school and high school coaches, and we have a little coaches clinic. And we used to go every year to a different college and spend a couple days and watch them practice and hang out with their coaches. You know, we've been to Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, West Virginia, you know, John Carroll, Cleveland State. So we used to do that. It's tough now with kids.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's a little bit more challenging, right?
Yeah, but man, we used to, boy.
Man, what was your favorite one you ever went to? What was the best couple days you spent at a program?
The best couple days, I'll tell you, and I love John Beilein, you know, when he was at Michigan, but Michigan State with Izzo, he was the best. I mean, we, this is great. So we go there and watch him practice, and then afterwards, you know, go and talk to the assistant, John, what was his name? Boyle. He's in the NBA now. He was with the Bulls. But and then we talked to Coach Izzo. He was great. I mean, he just, you know, he just was like an ordinary guy, you know. And we went out afterwards and had some, you know, food and stuff. And then he goes, "We'll come back tomorrow, watch us practice, and you know, you can tailgate with us after practice, and you know, we'll go to the game, the football game." We're like, "Oh, okay." So we go there, and I mean, it just treated us like he knew us forever. So off the back of his office, you know, he's got his huge, like, stone patio, and it overlooks the football stadium. So here we go there, and he's grilling out. We're just hanging out with them, you know, and all those, you know, Maurice Ager and Neitzel and all those guys. Just, like, we knew them forever, like best friends, and we're just grilling out with them. And so we're done eating, and Coach is like, "Hey, let's go to the game." It's like, all right. So I'm just walking with Coach Izzo, like, he was my best friend. We're talking, you know, going to the game, and, you know, people, "Hey, Coach, how you doing?" And just, so we we end up going with him, and we go on the field. We go on the field. Mike, we're on the field. I'm, like, standing next to the football players on the field. And this is during warm-ups, right, pregame. So then Coach is like, "All right, hey, let's go to our seats, guys." So I'm like, "All right, cool." So we go to our seats. They're like, you know, like first or second row, 50-yard line. I'm just, you know, sitting next to Coach Izzo, like, just talking.
That's awesome.
It was great. I mean, they just treated us like, I mean, first class. And now he's, you know, been a big fan of his. And, you know, the year we went to Ohio State, Mike, that was the freshman year, when the Odin, those guys were freshmen.
Ah, Odin, yeah, absolutely.
Conley, yep. Daquan Cook. Oh, my God. You talk about, I mean, Conley was so good, Mike. You know, you remember, was it Butler? Remember the other guard there was Butler?
Yeah,
was
yeah,
Jamar
yep.
Butler? Was that his
yep.
name?
Yep, I think so, yeah.
And he was, I think, a junior. And Conley was a freshman. Mike, Conley playing, it looked like someone hit a fast forward button. I mean, Jamar Butler could not keep up with him. I felt bad for him because Jamar Butler was a Big Ten player.
Right, it was a great athlete. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And Conley just went through him like nothing. I remember looking at my coaches. I go, "Guys, you see Conley in Ohio State jersey?" I go, "You're not going to see him next year
because he's not going to be for very long."
Yeah,
yep.
I said
yep.
he will not be in an Ohio. I knew right away. I could just tell. I said he will not be in an Ohio State jersey next year. They're like, "What? Come on!" They're like, "Come on, Coach. He's a freshman." I go, just remember, I said this. You know, he did leave after his freshman year.
And it's funny because he wasn't. I mean, clearly he was a big time recruit if you're going to Ohio State, but he wasn't a big time recruit.
No.
Where he was definitely not a guy that anybody was looking at saying, "Oh, Mike Conley's going to be one and done. He's going to be he's going to be the fourth pick in the draft." I mean, nobody saw that coming. Even I think, even after that season, as good as he was, I still think that I don't know that anybody would have said that he was going to go as high as he did in the draft. And obviously, he's had an unbelievable NBA career. And you could have got a lot of money for saying that Mike Conley was going to have a better career than Greg Oden back in those days.
Yeah, because I mean, Oden was the one. You know, they thought Oden was the guy that was really going to, you know, pan out. But, man, I'll never forget that, watching him in practice, just seeing him go through, just up and down the floor, like, oh, my God. Now, did his jumper need some work? Yeah, it needed work. But, man, he just had another gear. He could change speed so fast. He was so good. Now, you know, then we went to West Virginia the one year and watched Huggins, and you know, he's hilarious. I mean, he just rips kids.
He's a different sort of guy. I'll tell you a story. Go ahead and finish yours, but I'll tell you a Bob Huggins story from when I was a kid. My interaction, I didn't directly interact with him, but got to see him interact with somebody else.
Oh.
But finish your experience with him.
Oh, man. He's hilarious because, you know, he'll just go off on a kid and rip him to shreds. And then he's joking around with the kid, you know, later on. I mean, oh, it's just so funny. Just a different... You know, different style than Beeline. He was kind of more along the lines like Izzo, you know what I mean?
Right.
Huggins, you know. And then, you know, Thad Matta was Ohio State, and he's, you know, he's very calm, quiet. I mean, John Gross was there, you know, who's at Akron U right now. He was the assistant at Ohio State when we went down there, and John, you know, ran practice pretty much. And Thad's just very, you know, he'd have his input, say a couple things, and... but yeah, man, Huggins, oh God, he's hilarious. Oh my God.
It's funny how different coaches can be who are tremendously successful. It's one of the things that's, I think, most interesting about the coaching profession is you can have coaches that have completely opposite styles and yet can have success. And I think a lot of times, especially when you're talking about the college level, high school, obviously it's harder because you don't have as much control over who the players are that you bring in. But there's a certain type of player who can excel under Bob Huggins, and there's a certain kind of player that could excel under Thad Matta. And there's not necessarily an overlap between those two types of players. You have to have, I think, a certain way of wanting to be coached, or maybe it's the experience of what your high school coach was like, or your AAU coach, or just what you've grown up with,
right?
What you feel comfortable with. And it's just interesting that you can have success in so many different ways. So my Bob Huggins story, when I was in, I believe I was in 10th grade, and we went to team camp at Wadsworth. And I think Huggins was at, I think he was at Akron still at that. I think he was at Akron at that point.
Yeah.
But he, we're sitting there, and he came in as like a guest lecturer after lunch. So, you know, we're all sitting around underneath the basket, and he's giving his talk. And I think the talk was about post play. So he calls this kid up from, kid was from Berea, and he was like a 6'5 kid, kind of a, not necessarily the toughest kid that was out there. Like you kind of knew just from playing against him that he just wasn't that tough. And so Huggins brings him out, and he's got the football pad, and Huggins has him doing post moves and whatever. And Huggins is just, I mean, just beating the tar out of this kid. I mean, literally just, I mean, smacking him around with this pad. And then he's saying stuff to the kid, and, you know, like, oh, come on, you gotta get tougher. You know, if you want to play in the post for, you know, any team that I'm going to coach, you know, you got to be a lot tougher than this. And he's just, I mean, he's just like you said, he's like ripping the kid, but this isn't one of his players. You know, this is just a kid. This is a kid he pulls out of the audience at a camp as like a 10th grader. And when he was done with him, Huggins probably had him out there for, I don't know, 3 minutes, and was just beating on him and just making comments. And the kid was crying by the time it was over. Like, he felt bad. I'm just like, oh, it's just, you know. So then you're like,
oh my God.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if I would have wanted to play for, you know, at that time, you're like, sure. I don't know if I'd want to play for Coach Huggins if, you know, he's making a kid cry in 3 minutes. That doesn't bode well if I'm going to try to make it through a 2.5 hour practice with him every day. So anyway, it was one of those things that it was kind of interesting when you think about what Bob Huggins' personality is like. Like, right. you have to be the kind of kid or player that can take some of that in order to be able to get through and learn from a guy who obviously is one of the better college coaches that we've had in the last 30 years. I mean, he's had a tremendous amount of success everywhere he's been.
Right.
But it does take a certain style of player to be able to play for him underneath that type of coaching style.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, that's the thing with coaching is, you know, that's his personality. That's who he is. You know, if he were to coach any other way, you know, he wouldn't be as effective.
Absolutely. I think that's really key, is you got to be yourself. I know that when you think about, and I think you hear about this, and I think about myself as a coach, and especially when back when I started, I mean, I've always been kind of a mild-mannered type of guy. And so when you think about my coaching style, and part of me always was like, oh, I got to get tougher. You know what I mean? Like, I got to be able to yell. I got to be able to yell, and I got to be able to do this and that. And whenever I would try to do it, I would almost be laughing at myself while I was doing it, because I'm like, this is just not, you know what I mean? It just doesn't fit who I am. And eventually, after a year or two of trying to do that, I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work for me. I just got to be who I am. Cause kids sniff it out. You know, if I'm almost laughing when I'm yelling, they're certainly, maybe they're not laughing right in my face, but I guarantee when they're in the locker room away from me, they're like, did you see Cleansing trying to yell at us? Let's see what, you know, what's that guy thinking? So it's just interesting how we develop as coaches, and you have to coach to your personality, because if you don't, the kids sniff that out really, really fast.
Yeah, it's funny because my JV coach, he's been with me, I think, 9 years, and he was a senior my first year at Revere. And he went on to Southern New Hampshire, you know, got a scholarship there, Division II school, played 4 years there. And he's funny because he'll say stuff to the kids like, man, Coach Reyes has gotten nice, man. He's gotten soft since he's had kids. You know, he goes, man, when I coached my senior year, he was yelling and screaming. You know, so it's funny, you know, to look back on, you know, when you first start coaching, you know, how you change. I mean, you know, and anybody that's been coaching a long time, you know, they're probably not coaching the same way that they coach, you know, their first few years. So we laugh about it. Oh yeah, he's funny. You know, and he's a city kid, you know what I mean? He came to Revere and came from Akron East, and he's funny. He always just say, man, coach is just, he's gotten soft. Coach is, you know, and every now and then I'll, you know, get mad or yell or something like that, and he'll be like, yeah, that's the coach I know.
That's the guy. All right, that's the guy, yeah. I remember. Where's he been? I wish these kids could experience more of that.
You know, and yeah, I'll get up, yeah.
There's definitely an evolution. There's definitely an evolution for sure.
Yeah, and that's and especially in today's day and age, I don't think kids really respond to that type of coaching. And you know, I've seen coaches who are volatile, who are screamers and yellers, and they've been successful, but then the moment they start losing, then things start to fall apart. Yeah, you know I mean, like I think sometimes when coaches are winning, yet they're volatile, or you know, maybe their coaching style is really not what you'd want, but they're winning, people kind of turn the cheek and kind of, yep, you know what I mean, say, we can deal with it. But I've always felt that you need to have a coaching style that, regardless if you're winning or losing, people are comfortable with.
That's so true. I mean, it's interesting that you talk about that particular aspect, because when you think about what the image of a coach was when you and I were growing up, and it was much more of that Bobby Knight model of coaching, whether it's the my way or the highway, or right, just, you know, I'm going to do things and you're the player and I'm the coach, and you're not going to ask questions. You're not going to do anything besides listen to exactly what I say. And I'm going to oftentimes say it in a way that may not be all that nice. And you just have to learn how to deal with it. Like, I don't know if you've read Season on the Brink recently, yep, but if you go back and you read that today, and you just listen to the language and the things that he was saying and doing to those kids. It's amazing that he was able to get away with it then. But you think about it today, and I mean, there's like, I don't know, 700 fireable offenses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in that book. I mean, it's crazy. And again, that's just the way it was. And he was a product of the environment that he grew up in terms of what was acceptable and the way coaches. And obviously he was a tremendous basketball mind and tremendous basketball coach and got the most out of a lot of his players. But you just look back on it, you're like, gosh, I can't believe that. Like, if you were a parent and your kid came home and said, and again, it was different because kids didn't share things the same. You know, I mean, I didn't come home and tell my dad or my mom what this coach said to me or that. Like that stuff didn't exist. You just did what you were supposed to do, and you took what you needed to take in order to be able to earn your playing time or be a member of the team or whatever it was. It's a totally different era. So it's like comparing apples and oranges, but it's so interesting to go back and read a book like that, that chronicles what things were like in 1984 compared to the way we coach today. And as you said, I think it's a good little statement that you made there in terms of, you have to be able to coach with a style that is going to be beneficial to kids, whether you're winning or you're losing. And if you do that, and I always say, for me, if you're doing what's best for the kids that are part of your program, then that's a pretty good compass for you to follow in terms of what you should be doing as a coach. If the outcomes are based on what's best for the kids in your program, then you're going to have success. And that sometimes that's going to be success on the scoreboard, but more often it's going to be success like you mentioned about the kid who's a doctor, or the kid who goes on to play at Princeton, or the kid who comes back who was part of your program and is now a coach in your program. Like those are the real successes. And that's what you get when you coach with your kids in mind and put them first.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny you bring up Bobby Knight, because last night they had the ESPN 30 for 30 on Bobby Knight. The whole story about Bobby, it was great. You know, and we watched it with my son, and even my son just couldn't believe. You know, he's in fifth grade. He couldn't believe the things that, you know, Bobby Knight's doing, you know, throwing chairs, grabbing kids and swearing and cussing. I mean, he turned and looked at me like, oh my gosh. I'm like, yeah, damn, Michael.
That's how it was.
That's how it was, buddy.
And I mean, he might have been on the extreme, but there were a lot of guys that were very similar. Because again, he was widely considered to be the standard of what a coach was.
Right.
So when people are looking at somebody to emulate, he was the guy. I mean, he was the guy. People wanted to be Bob Knight. They wanted to teach man-to-man defense. They wanted to play motion offense. They wanted to be that kind of stern taskmaster that Bobby Knight was. And again, it's just a product of his era.
Yeah, and he, you know, and sometimes, you know, I think people confuse yelling with coaching.
I agree.
You know, they think that just because you're yelling and screaming, you're coaching, and, you know, you don't have to yell and scream to coach. You know, it's funny when you hear, you know, people, things that they say, because I'm pretty mild-mannered. Yeah, I mean, I can get my point across by not raising my voice. I can pull a kid aside and put my arm around and be like, what the heck are you doing?
Right.
Oh, what kind of pass was that? Are you serious? You just got beat three times. You just got beat three times. You're wondering why I'm pulling you out of the game. Are you watching the same game that I'm watching? You know what I mean? So there's subtle ways to get your point, you know, your point across to kids. But again, it all comes down to, you know, having a style that people are comfortable with regardless of the outcome of the game. And heck, some of my best coaching jobs have been when maybe we haven't won a lot of games. You know, it's not always just because you win a lot of games. We've had, you know, we've been very fortunate that they have a lot of great players and experienced success, but you know, we've had some tough years, some thin years, but you know, we were able to get our kids to play hard from start to finish and you know, enjoy, you know, success that way. You know, it's like you said, it's not always in the outcome. And my college coach, you know, Coach Massimino, you know, he'd always say, it's not the arriving, it's the striving. You know, that's important. You know, the process, you know, preparing for games, working hard, getting better, improving, not just because you win. You know, you won the game. So I always found that to be very helpful.
Yeah, it is. And I think that as a coach, we obviously hear that a lot more than we did back when you and I were younger. I think more coaches have adopted that philosophy in terms of, look, we have to do what we do. We have to prepare the right way. We have to play the right way. And if we do that, we're probably going to end up winning more often than we lose on the scoreboard. But we can also judge our success in a different way. And I know that you're the same way that I am. Like, you can walk into a gym, and I don't care whether it's an AAU game or it's a fifth grade travel game or it's a middle school game or it's a high school varsity game that you're scouting. Like, you could walk into a gym and know whether or not the team is well coached. Even a team that's losing, like if they're playing hard and they're organized and they're playing together, then you're like, look, that team may be 1-16, but that coach knows what they're doing. Like, they have their kids playing to the best of their ability. And I think that's something that if you know the game, you can recognize what a well-coached team looks like. And then I always tell people, you can also recognize who the best player on the floor is, even if they're not scoring a bunch of baskets. Like, you talk to the average, whatever, parent of a high school kid, or you go and watch an AAU tournament and you see people sitting on the sideline, you took a little poll, you're like, hey, who's the best player on the floor? Well, who has the most points? You know, who's made the most shots? Whereas you and I would sit and watch that game and go, look, this kid's totally orchestrating everything. He's missed four shots in a row, but you could tell like he's got good form and he's in the spots where he's supposed to be and he's setting his teammates up. And there's just a difference between a kid playing basketball and a player. And I think as a coach, you can recognize both of those things. You can recognize somebody who has a well-coached team, and then you can recognize a kid who really knows how to play the game versus just someone who's out there running up and down the floor.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
When did you know you wanted to coach? When was the first time that coaching popped into your head? Was it something that you always knew you wanted to do, or was it something that didn't come to you until your playing career was winding down?
I would say, I would say probably when I got in college. I would say, you know, my freshman year, I was at Ohio University. I played there my freshman year, and then I transferred during my sophomore year to Cleveland State. And you know, my high school coach, Coach Tavoli, you know, talked me into health and phys ed and the teaching and coaching, because I originally started off in, believe it or not, fisheries biology.
Nice, there you
at,
go.
at OU, and you know, there was like a lot of science classes and chem classes. I'm like, oh my gosh, am I going to be a fisheries biologist or a doctor here? And so I talked to my coach, like, hey, why don't you, you know, get into phys ed, you know, phys ed and health, and, you know, teach and coach, and it's a good life, and, you know, it's a great career. You get to work with kids. And then I, you know, I worked some summer camps for coach and really liked working with kids and coaching, and that's kind of where I got the bug. And then playing college ball, I'm like, yeah, I think I'd like to coach, you know, be a teacher and a coach. And that's kind of how it started, you know. And then you know, I transferred to Cleveland State and you know, played there for 3 years, and you know, I was lucky to you know, graduate there in the 97, and I got hired in the spring at Olmsted Falls. You know, and then from there, I coached at Olmsted Falls. I was a freshman. I had my first team. Gosh, I had my first team. My very first year was 97, 98. I had a freshman team. And we ended up going, I think it was 15-5, and we won the conference tournament. And then the second year we went like 16-4 and lost in the conference tournament championship. And I was varsity assistant my third year. I was full-time varsity assistant. And then my last 2 years, I went back to Cleveland State as a grad assistant while I still taught at Olmsted Falls. So I was a grad assistant for 2 years at Cleveland State, which was awesome because I got to coach with, you know, Coach Massimino, and who I played for my senior year, because my first 2 years I played at, well, here, let me go back a little bit in terms of playing. You want to hear playing career? Or?
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Okay. So, you know, Valley Forge, played for Coach Tavoli my junior and senior year. My sophomore year I played some varsity. We had a different coach. Coach Tavoli had stepped down and retired. So we had Pete Novakovic, was a nice guy. My sophomore year, and then he stepped down. Then Coach Tavoli came back, which was awesome because I always grew up watching Coach Tavoli and wanted to play for him, right? So he comes back. My junior year, we go like 11-10, I think it was something, maybe 11-10, and we had it was crazy because we were young and we had all these games where, like, I remember Lakewood. We're beating Lakewood by 20. At halftime, we ended up losing. We were beating Ignatius, who ended up going to the Elite Eight, right? We just didn't know how to win. You know? I mean, we were young. We didn't know how to close out games. So then we come back, senior year, lose our first two games. We lose to Ignatius, at Ignatius by 20, which nobody wins at Ignatius. I mean, you know, I mean, they have the priests or the officials. But
that's right.
I can say that. And then we lose the Holy Name, a Holy Name at the buzzer. All right, so here we're 0-2. And we had all these expectations. We're like, what the heck? We're supposed to be good this year. What's going on? So then we end up winning 21 in a row. And that was the old LEO. with Shaw, Shaker, Cleveland Heights. We ran the table, all right? So we went 12-0 in the league. And I remember a great game. It was my senior year. We were 11-0. Shaker Heights was 10-1. And we were playing on a Tuesday night at Valley Forge. Sold out. You know, Valley Forge is a big gym.
Yep.
You know what I mean? The upper deck there on the home side, filled. People standing room, filled. So, you know, if we win it outright. If we lose, we, you know, co-champ. So we end up winning in overtime at the buzzer. I mean, you talk about an unbelievable game. I mean, just the shot, and the shot goes in at the buzzer, and everybody just, I mean, they're like mice. They storm the court, right? So then we meet Ignatius in the district finals, a little rematch. We end up beating them in the district finals, go to regionals, and we play McKinley at the Civic Center. We just played bad. We ended up losing by 6, but we played horrible, you know, and we lost that game.
Hey hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
So then I go to OU my freshman year, play for Larry Hunter, great coach. You know, he was a great X and O guy. He had won a national championship at Wittenberg. Learned a lot about the game of basketball from him. I mean, just a lot about X's and O's and all that. And then, you know, my freshman year, I kind of got discouraged. You know what I mean? I didn't play a lot. And, you know how it is. You come out of high school and you're all state and all league and all district and all this,
it's
that,
tough.
And the other.
It's tough. It's tough to sit when you've been when you've been the guy your whole career.
Right. And it's a shot to your ego, you know what I mean? But the reality is, and you know, when you go to college, not everybody's going to be the man. So you got to accept your role or move on. So after my freshman year, transfer, go back to Cleveland State. And, you know, I wasn't even going to play basketball. I was just going to be a student. And it's a crazy story, Mike. So I just, you know, yeah, I'm just going to go be a student, get my degree, teach, coach, whatever. So I'm walking to class, and I hear somebody say, "Dean?" I'm like, "Yeah, hey, coach, what's going on?" So it was, what was his name? I can't remember. But his daughter played at Valley Forge, and he remembered me, and he was a coach. You know, he coached girls basketball. He goes, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I'm just going to school." He goes, "Why aren't you at OU?" I said, "No, I'm done playing basketball. I'm just going to go to school." He goes, "No, you're coming with me. Let's go." So he takes me to the coach's office at Cleveland State, to Sean Hood, who was there. And, you know, he goes, "Hey, Sean." He goes, "Dean Rahas." He goes, "Oh, yeah, Dean, what's going on, man? You're what?" He's like looking at me like, "What are you doing here?" You know, like people are perplexed. Like, you're at OU. I'm like, "Hey, right. Coach, I'm just, you know, I'm kind of done. I'm not playing." And he's like, No. You got to play. No, you're playing. You know what I mean? So I'm like, "All right." I mean, I go, "I got to get in shape. I got to," you know, he goes, "Don't worry. You'll be fine." So I started playing, and, you know, that's kind of how it, you know, I got into it. And then, you know, I had to sit that year, you know what I mean? And then I was able to play the next three, you know? So if I would have never seen, you know, that girls coach, I probably would have never played, you know? And I can't remember his last name. Oh my gosh, his daughter played at Valley Forge.
It'll come to you in an hour from now.
You know it will. You know, I don't know if it was Duff. Was the last name Duffy? Might have been Duffy. And, you know, I who knows what I would have done. you know, and then so I had to sit that year. And then, you know, I played for Mike Boyd for 2 years. And then, you know, he stepped down, and then Coach Mass got hired, and I mean, which was a blessing. And had a great senior year, you know, just really, you know, because, you know, after playing for 2 years, you know, I was starting to think, man, is this really for me? You know, and then Coach Mass came in, and it was just a, you know, breath of fresh air and a shot in the arm. And like I always tell people, I said, you know, I played 4 years of, you know, college basketball. I said, but I got to play for three different coaches, three completely different coaches. I mean, and even when you're playing for coaches that you may not like, you still learn what not to do.
Absolutely.
You know, and, you know, Larry Hunter was a great X and O guy, you know, and, you know, God rest his soul. He passed away, you know, a few years ago. But in terms of, you know, relating to kids and communicating with kids, I mean, he was all business. I mean, it was all business. You know, and here I came from, you know, high school, Coach Tivoli, and he was a player's coach.
Right, you're right, building relationships.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And Coach Hunter was just had a different all business, man. So then I go to William State, and I have Mike Boyd. Well, Mike Boyd's on the other end of the spectrum. You know what I mean? He was, you know, not really a disciplinarian. You know, there wasn't much structure. So I kind of learned, you know, from each coach what to do and what not to do. So he's on the other end of the spectrum, Mike. So then here comes Coach Mass. Well, Coach Mass is just like my high school coach, Coach Tivoli. Hey, when it's time to work, we're going to work. But, you know, when it's time to have fun, we're going to have fun. You know, and again, great basketball mind, great coach, even better man. You know, so personable. I mean, he just, you know, he just loved being around people. I mean, he loved relationships, and he was so connected. I mean, I could just tell you, the people that he knew, you wouldn't even believe. And it was just it was a great experience, you know. So to have three college coaches was really, you know, it was crazy at the time. But when I look back on it, I mean, I learned so much. Just it was great. And then to be able to, you know, after I graduated, you know, I went to Olmsted Falls, and like I said, I coached there. And then to come back to Cleveland State and be able to coach with, you know, my college coach. And, you know, I also introduced my high school coach to Coach Massimino. Well, here you get two Italians together, right? So those guys become really close friends. So my high school coach, Coach Tivoli, was a volunteer assistant at Cleveland State during that time. So here I get to go back to Cleveland State. Picture this. I get to coach with my two favorite coaches, right? You know, Coach Massimino, Coach Tivoli. I mean, what more could you ask for? You know,
it was. Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, it was. I mean, the story. I could talk to you for hours, just stories. You know about that. But real quick, it was. You know, because here I'm still teaching in Olmsted Falls, right, Mike?
Did you think you wanted to go to switch over and coach in college? Is that why you did it, or what was the thought process behind going to be a GA?
You know, I wanted to get the experience. You know, I mean, I was ready. I wanted to be a head high school coach, okay? And, you know, Pat Donahue, who, my God, I mean, talk about another great mentor that I had. I've just been so fortunate to have some, like, the greatest coaches around that I've worked under. You know, Coach Tivoli and, you know, Pat Donahue and Coach Massimino. And, you know, you look at, you know, Coach Hunter I wanted to get the experience and take advantage of the opportunity. And I was getting my master's degree at the time too. You know what I mean? So it worked out great that I was a grad assistant and they were able to help me out with my classes, you know? So here I'm teaching at Olmsted Falls, but then, you know, I'm a grad assistant, you know, at Cleveland State, and, you know, we'd have games during the week, and, you know, Coach Mass liked to go out after the games. You know what I mean? So here I got to teach, you know, in the morning, and here I'm going out with those guys. And it's funny because I'm like the young kid, right, with the older guys. And here we go out, let's say, to Flannery's, you know what I mean, after a game, like a Tuesday night. And then, you know, Coach is like, hey, guys, let's all go back to my house. I'm like, Coach, man, I got work tomorrow. Like, no, Dino, you got to come. You got to come. All right, Coach, let's go. So here, go to his house. He's making, I mean, it's like Goodfellas. He's making pasta. You know what I mean? He's got the, right. the sausage, the cheese, the meatballs, the, you know what I mean? I mean, I was looking for Ray Liotta and Pacino
hilarious.
And those guys. You know what I mean? And then I got to teach the next day. But it was great. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
I think just the opportunity, like you mentioned, about being able to be exposed to different coaches, I think is so valuable. Like for me, I had almost the opposite experience. So I played for the same high school coach, and then I played for the same college coach for 4 years. And so when I got done and I started coaching, in all honesty, the only thing I knew was what I had learned from those two guys. And I was probably a little bit naive and a little bit egotistical and thought, hey, I'm a good player and I know a lot about the game. And basically what I did was what those two guys did. And as a coach, that's what I modeled everything that I did. That's how I modeled the way I interacted with players. It's how I modeled X's and O's. It's how I modeled the drills that I did.
Right.
And I often wonder, like, what, you know, what would it have been like if I had played and had more exposure to different coaches and different styles, and how might that have impacted me? And then it's just, again, it's interesting how your evolution as a coach, you kind of have to figure out who you are and what you are. And for me, like I said, it was something that I just didn't have a lot of experience with different coaches, because what was good for me as a player in terms of stability probably wasn't that good for me as a coach and early sure. in my development, simply because I didn't have exposure to very many philosophies or systems. There was only two. I only knew two right. systems. So
yeah, and think about it. I mean, most guys that play college, I mean, they either have one, maybe two coaches. Maybe. You know what I mean? But they have three, you know, that's a whole, and you look at, you know, I played for three college coaches who all won national championships.
Yep, absolutely.
You know what I mean, you look at, you know, Larry Hunter at Wittenberg, you look at Mike Boyd, Michigan, right? And then you look at Coach Massimino at Villanova. So all three of those coaches brought something and helped me, you know, become the coach that I am today. And then, you know, God, right out of college, I go to Olmsted Falls, and they were a powerhouse. I mean, what Pat Donahue did there, nobody will ever do. You know, he won, I think, 13 league championships, like 8 district championships, I think 2 elite eights. I mean, his winning percentage was ridiculous. You don't see that, you know, and for him to be there, I think, 20 years or 20 plus years, what he did was just, so I learned a lot from him. You know, I go, you know, from having a Hall of Fame coach in high school, Hall of Fame coach in college, and then, you know, Pat Donahue's a Hall of Fame high school coach. You know,
so yeah, those are some great people to be able to learn from without question. I want to ask you about, you've had an opportunity to coach Larry Nance Jr., who is an NBA player. Not many high school coaches get the opportunity to coach a guy who's going to be a future NBA player. So just talk a little bit. And not only that, but he has a father who was an NBA right. player and a darn good NBA player at that. Yeah. So just maybe tell us a little bit about what that experience was like, maybe what set him apart in terms of, did you know early on that, hey, this guy has an opportunity at some point maybe to play in the league? Was he more of a late bloomer? Just kind of give people an idea sure. of what the experience was like coaching Larry.
You know, when I took over Revere, he was in fourth grade. And this is funny because I remember coming home after youth league and telling my wife, because they were in fourth grade. Then there was a fifth grade class that was good too. I tell my wife, I go, honey, I go, look, I said, when these guys get to high school, I said, we're going to be really good. She goes, they're in fourth and fifth grade. I go, look, just please listen. We are going to be really good. You know, so, I mean, thank goodness they stayed together. They all came up through Revere, went to high school, and, you know, we were able to, during Larry's junior year, you know, to win the first league championship since 1976. I mean, it was like a, you know, like a 35-year drought of no league championships. And we went back-to-back, you know, his junior and senior year. But he was, you know, you could tell at a young age, he was a skilled big kid. And, you know, he was a kid that I remember because the travel coaches wanted to put him on the block, right? And they said, "Oh, coach, we got to put him on the block." I said, "The heck you are." I said, "I want him to play the perimeter as much as possible." And you know, it's hard to take a kid who's been playing 5 feet from the basket his whole life and turn him into a perimeter player.
Absolutely.
You know, because you need those perimeter skills, you know, the passing and the, you know, reading the defense and making good decisions and shooting and ball handling, all that stuff, you know, and it's much easier to move a kid who's played outside inside. So that's what was a big, you know, a big draw and really attracted me to him was his ability to, you know, have the skill to play the perimeter at his size. And he wasn't a giant kid, but you could tell he had the long legs, the long arms, the big feet. He was, you know, he was going to be good. So, and he was a late bloomer. You know, Mike, this, it's not some kid who was, you know, a phenom, right, as a freshman. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, when he got drafted, I said, I'm willing to bet, because he got drafted in the first round. I said, I'm willing to bet every kid that got drafted in the first round was probably like a 4-year starter, like a phenom. You know what I'm saying? Dominated by in high school. Yep. So here we go, freshman year, he plays freshman, plays a little JV. And, you know, I really thought when he's a freshman, he was going to be a lot better. He's going to be farther ahead. And he wasn't. He just kind of was. Just kind of hit, like hit a rut. In his sophomore year, you know, the more I'm watching him, open gyms and stuff, and I'm looking at his skin and his color, and he just didn't look good. He didn't look healthy, and he was getting tired quick, Mike. You know what I mean? Like, you could tell the kid was trying to run. He was trying to move, and he just wasn't going anywhere. And he was very weak, so I told Larry Sr., I said, "Hey, Larry, I said, why don't you go take him to the doctor?" You know, I'm thinking to myself, maybe he's got an iron deficiency. You know what I'm saying? And so Larry goes, "All right." He takes him to the doctor. They find out that he's got Crohn's disease. He had ulcers all over his stomach. You know, that's why he was weak. He was tired. He didn't have an appetite. He'd just come home and sleep after school. So once they started treating him for the Crohn's disease, you know, he immediately started putting on weight. He started growing. He started to, you know, have more energy. He started to look healthy. You know what I mean? And he was like a new person. And he comes back his junior year. And he's, you know, he's coming off the bench for us. You know what I mean? And his turning point was we were at Wadsworth his junior year, and we had won several games in a row, and here we go to Wadsworth. We're down 19 at halftime at Wadsworth, and we come out in the second half, and I think we're down maybe 13 going into the fourth, and we cut it to one. We shoot, get the rebound, he gets fouled, we're down one. And he's at the line, 1-1, by the way, 1-1, with maybe 12 seconds left. Hits the first one to tie it, hits the second one to put us up one. Wadsworth has the ball with whatever, maybe 9 seconds or something, and you know, they call a timeout, and we change our defense, and we end up winning the game, right? And that was really, after that, he just went straight up. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a gradual, you know, improvement. It was like straight up. And he just kept getting better and better. And you could see, you know, then over the summer, he got better. Then in the fall, he got better. Then senior year, you know, that's when the school started coming around. You know what I mean? He was all set to go to Michigan, you know, because I called Beeline. Because when I was at Olmsted Falls, we had Mike Ganzi. And Mike Ganzi played for Beeline when he was at West Virginia. So I knew Beeline that way. So I called Beeline, and Beeline came out and saw him and watched him several times and loved him. And, and wanted to offer him a scholarship, and then it fell through. His assistants weren't big on him, right? This is crazy. His assistants weren't big on him. They didn't think he rebounded enough, right? Meanwhile, I think he was getting 14 rebounds a game. It's just crazy how people think. So they end up, you know, and so he's all set. He's thinking, all right, you know, I'm going to go to Michigan, you know, because they said, hey, he's our guy. We want him. So all the other schools backed off. So then they end up, they gave his scholarship to someone else. So here, the kid's devastated, crushed. So was I, because, you know, he would have been a great player at Michigan with John Beilein's offense. You know what I'm saying? Because John, you know, he likes guys that can shoot, guys that have a high basketball IQ, which is what Larry Jr. was, high basketball IQ, still is. He's a great passer. You watch him play. I mean, he makes passes you don't see guys at his position make, you know. So here I'm scrambling. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I got to call these coaches now, you know, the ones that were interested in him. So I get a hold of OU, and John Gross was at OU at the time. So I explained the situation to John. John goes, I'll be there tomorrow. So John comes over. We talk, sits in my office. And, I mean, it was, you know, he goes and talks to the Nances after at their house, and it's just going to be a done deal. You know, I mean, it's a formality. They had an official visit set up. I mean, who goes to OU and doesn't like OU? You've been to OU.
Right,
it's beautiful.
Right, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Great arena, yep. Great campus, yep. One of the best-looking campuses around. So a couple days later, John calls me. He goes, Dean, I got bad news. I said, what? He goes, our APR came back, you know, the academic performance rating. They do that, I think, every 5 years. And we lost a scholarship because the coach who was there before John was O'Shea, and they had a kid who didn't meet the criteria, and then they took the scholarship, because if you don't meet certain criteria, the NCAA, you know, could take a scholarship. So here, Larry was all set to go to OU, and they pulled a scholarship. So he goes to, Larry Shiat comes, flies in, comes and sees me. We talk. He flies Larry out. Larry comes back, and he's loving it. He said, I'm going to Wyoming. I'm saying, what? What do you mean you're going to Wyoming? I love it there, coach. Blah, blah, blah. He goes on and on and on, right? And I'm thinking to myself, there's no way in hell he can go to Wyoming. Nobody's going to see him play. His parents aren't going to be able to see him. So I called John Gross. I go, look, John. I go, what can we do to get him at OU? He goes, well, he'd have to pay his first year. But after his first year, we get that scholarship back, and he would be put on scholarship. And even though he's not on a scholarship his freshman year, we can still treat him like a scholarship player. He can still start and play, this, that, and the other. I'm like, okay, great. So I call Larry Sr. I go, hey, look, I go, this is the situation. You know, I know you probably don't want him to go to Wyoming because he's going to be on the other side of the planet. You know, are you interested in doing this? So I explained to him, you know, what I had talked with John about. And Larry goes, yeah, I'll talk to Larry Jr., you know, about it and see what he says. And, you know, maybe have him go on a visit. You know, but by then, you know, Larry Jr. was just, I think he just wanted to go to a place where he was wanted and he could get a scholarship.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which, you know, understandably so.
For sure.
You know, because think, I mean, Michigan broke his heart, and here now OU, this goes, and then here comes Wyoming, they fly him out there and, you know, promise him the world and, you know, treat him like, you know, like he's $1 million. So he ends up going to Wyoming. You know, and you know, the rest is history. I mean, he just, it worked out for him, thank God. You know, I was really worried about him going there. But it was a good move for him because it wasn't too big. You know, it was, you know, and it's not knocking Wyoming in that conference, but, you know, it was a conference where he could develop his skills and his confidence, and he could carry that team, which is what he did his senior year. He carried that team to the NCAA tournament. You know, they won their conference tournament, and he did blow his knee out, you know, during his junior year, which it was amazing that he even came back the following year, Mike. I mean, I you know, when I talked to him after he got hurt, you know, he was kind of leaning towards sitting out, you know, a year and then coming back, but man, he came back better and stronger and which I couldn't believe, but it probably helped with the position that he played. I think it might be easier for a big guy as opposed to a guard.
And the medical is so good now. Oh. It's amazing. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah. So they got him, and then he, he had a great senior year. His stock went way up, and you know, the more I started watching him, you know, I started thinking he's an NBA player. And I would even tell college guys, you know, college coaches that like that were not sure about him. I'd say, let me tell you something about Larry Jr. I said, because I remember one coach came and watched him and said, coach, I don't know if he's tough enough. You know what I mean? I said, if you want somebody that knows how to win, you want Larry. If you want somebody that makes people around him better, you want Larry. If you want somebody that you don't have to worry about doing dumb things off the court, you want Larry. I said, now, if you want somebody to go out there and start pushing someone and throwing bows and fisticuffs, I go, you don't want Larry. I said, but I will tell you this. If you don't pick him up, I said, in 2 years, you will be kicking yourself in the butt saying, why the hell didn't we get that kid? I remember as clear as day saying that to one of the coaches. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But it just, you know, college coaches, they place so much value on, athleticism.
For sure.
You know what I mean? And there's so many guys that are skilled and they're athletic, but number one, they don't know how to win. Number two, they don't make guys around them better. So to me, if you can't do those two things, why in the hell do I want you? You know? And, you know, you look at Mark Few at Gonzaga, and yeah, granted, hey, let me tell you something. Butler would have beat anybody in the country that night.
They were fantastic,
They
man.
May have beaten some NBA teams that night. They were that damn good. All right, but you look at Mark, guy like Mark Few, squeaky clean, not in trouble, no violations. He gets guys who look like average Joes, right, and he wins with them. Because they play together. I mean, that's why they won all those games and were undefeated. I mean, they were such a good team, you know. But you know, they met a team that was just that much better, you know. But so Larry, you know, ended up, you know, getting drafted, which was great. You know, got to play with Kobe. You know, got to play with LeBron. And he's just a great guy. I mean, the whole family. I mean, his brother Pete, who's at Northwestern, I saw him last week. You know, he would, you know, shot me a text and, you know, wanted to come up to the high school and work out. So, you know, got him in the gym, got some shots up. And, you know, the older daughter who played at Dayton, Casey, you know, she's wonderful. I mean, she's an assistant coach at Revere for the girls program. I always tell her, I say, hey, I'll bring you along in our program.
There you go. I mean? Yeah, she's so exactly.
Good. She's so good, and then the parents, you know, Janie and Larry are really just special people. They're very humble, down to earth. You know, they don't want any special treatment, or they don't want to be different than anybody else. You know, and they're always very generous and kind and gracious. And you know, my wife Lisa and I, we've become really close with their family over the years. You know, and I still talk to Larry Sr. We probably talk, I don't know, once a week or once every other week. You know, we talk quite a bit. I've just been really lucky, Mike, really lucky.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think one of the things that I always find is that when you have parents who have had some athletic achievement themselves, that they tend to be, at least in most cases, I think, more grounded in terms of being realistic about who their kids are, and they're not trying to live vicariously through their children, which we see a lot of people do. And it's great that, you know, again, you had the opportunity to coach those guys, and I'm sure like they're very public successes that you can see the success that each of the brothers have had in their own way. And then I'm sure you have a lot of kids that don't have the same type of public success, but you mentioned the kid who's in med school, and you talk about the kid who's, you know, back on your coaching staff, and
right.
Those successes I'm sure are equally as important to you, even though they aren't as public. And I think that's really what coaching is all about is, yeah, we all love to win. And I know you're as competitive as anybody. And ultimately what happens out on the floor is important, but really you start talking about the impact you can have as a coach on kids, and you see that impact 5 years later, 10 years later, 20 years later, when they're having families and they're getting a promotion at their job, they're getting married, or they're having kids or whatever it might be. And I think that's one of the things that coaching has really continued to evolve in that direction in terms of building those relationships. And I promised you that we would try to keep it to an hour and 15 minutes.
Sorry.
So I've already blown past my time limit, which I knew I was going to. But I want to ask you one final two-part question.
Yeah.
And that is, I want you to share, when you look ahead, what is your biggest challenge that you see in front of you? And then number two, what's your biggest joy when you got to get out of bed in the morning and you wake up as the head basketball coach at Revere? What's the biggest joy you get from that? So your biggest challenge and your biggest joy.
Biggest challenge, you know, we just had two great senior guards, you know, graduate, you know, two kids who scored over 1,000 points during the same year, which is a rarity. I mean, that's just tremendous kids. And, you know, whenever you lose, you know, special players, and every year we do, you know, for the most part, you know, you think, oh gosh, who's gonna step up? Who's gonna fill those shoes? What are we gonna be like? You know, I think that's the biggest challenge, you know, is who's gonna step up? You know, who's gonna carry the torch and continue this this success that we've had? You know, we've been able in the past 10 years to win 5 league championships, and, you know, the school's first district championship, and then, you know, 4 district runner-ups. So, you know, as a coach, you want more. You know, you want to win more and, you know, see the kids succeed and do things that they've never done before. And, you know, when I came to Revere, you know, we always said we want to win a league championship and we want to win a district championship. We've been able to do that. And I want to see our kids, you know, cut the nets down. I want to see them do those things. And because I know what it did for me, and I know how important it was to me and still is. And I look back on it, and I want them to enjoy that. You know, I want them to have that feeling, and I hope they do. Because, you know, it goes by fast, and you only go through high school once. That's it, 4 years, and you're done. You know, so that's the challenge right there, is to get back on top, you know, and not be content. And it's easy to be content. You know, I mean, we've won the league and we've won the district, but, you know, we still got to stay hungry. And the next question was
your biggest joy.
My biggest joy is just seeing the kids improve and get better. And the neat thing, you know, you and I, we talked about the youth league, and it's so fun to see these kids, you know, first and second grade, and then you just see them progress, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, and you see these kids get better. And that's what's fun, is because you look forward to, you know, coaching these kids. You know, and you think, God, someday, you know, and I tell kids, hey, I can't wait till you get to high school, you know, so we can coach you. You know, I can't wait to see you. You know, and that's what keeps you going. You know, it's the kids. Yeah, I mean, if I didn't like the kids, you know, I wouldn't be, you know, coaching this long. And, you know, this is my 19th year as the head coach at Revere. You know, my 24th year teaching and coaching overall. So that's the joy right there, is working. I mean, that's why you do this. I mean, if you don't like kids, then you're probably not a teacher or a coach. If you are,
you're probably not a good one anymore.
You're probably not a good one, right? You know. So yeah, that's I would say that's the joy, is the kids and all the different personalities, and, you know, so it's fun, it's rewarding.
Absolutely. All right, before we get out, share how people can get in touch with you, whether you want to share email or social media. How can people reach out to you after listening to the podcast? And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah. We have our Twitter page, you know, that we have for boys basketball. And let me get that here. It's Coach Rejas at Revere Boys B-Ball. So Coach Rejas at Revere Boys B-Ball. And that is our Twitter page. My email at school is D, as in Dean, Rahas, R-A-H-A-S, at revereschools.org.
Awesome. Dean, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to jump on with me tonight. It's been a lot of fun for me to reconnect with you both on our phone conversation a couple of days ago and then talking for an hour and a half tonight. It's been a lot of fun, and it's one of those things that you think about all these relationships you've had in the game over the course of time, and you know, people kind of, you drift in and out of people's lives, and I'm glad that we were able to reconnect, and this was a lot of fun to kind of talk and learn more about your story, that some things that certainly I didn't know growing up and knowing you as a kid. It was a lot of fun for me. So I thank you for that. And to everyone out there, we appreciate you listening to this episode, and we will catch you on the next one. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.